From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
If we had a budget, the layoffs would stop.
We're calling it a political rally, but it's really about... it's not about re-election. I'm not making any announcement about election. Everybody saying, "Oh, is this your re-election campaign?" This is not. This is about this is political, but it's about talking to the people of Illinois.
But we have no budget, and they don't have a clue.
Do your job. Do your job.
I say, the General Assembly, the Democrats in the majority, haven't even passed a budget. They not even an unbalanced one. No budget. Talk about not doing your job.
Today's theme music, as always, by the Pretenders and Governor State University student Rachel Gatone. She's saying, if we had a budget, at a GSU Student Senate Forum on Higher Education. We also heard from Governor Bruce Rauner in there. He went this week on a two-day political tour of Illinois, but would rather you not say that he was actually campaigning. We'll hear more about that. It's coming up today on State Week in Springfield. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse studio, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio Statehouse reporter, and our guest joining us from Chicago today, Chicago Tribune political reporter Rick Pearson. Rick, thanks for being with us again.
Good to be with you.
Well, as the song explained, we still have no budget, but do we have a campaign for Governor Rauner? I think that's what everybody thought, that he was launching his campaign bid when he made this swing around the state. Rick, apparently he says that's not the case.
No, he says that's not the case, but he says his two-day tour was political, that he invited Republican supporters to attend some of these events. But he said he's talking about trying to get his message out to the people. And in all of this, I find this kind of very mixed messaging, because you have the fact that even in these appearances that were, quote, political, unquote, he's basically saying the same thing that he said for over a year, even in governmental appearances, about, you know, here are his conditions for ending the stalemate. The conditions haven't changed. His rhetoric really hasn't changed. And when he says that the grand purpose of going out is to get his message to the people, yet he's inviting Republican supporters to attend these, you have to wonder, if is that message getting to his own Republican supporters?
Yeah, Brian, is that what Rick said there? Is it getting to his own Republican supporters? Was that part of the idea here, to shore up that base a bit? Maybe people are a little bit concerned, as we hear about all these Democrats who want to run against him next year, that he needed to get out and actually see some of these people one-on-one?
Well, the polling suggests that we've seen that Governor Rauner is still popular with Republicans downstate. That is, and that's where this tour was focused. That is the one area of the state where people are still have a generally favorable view. I think he is above water. Otherwise, his unfavorable rating is quite high if you take Illinois as a whole. And, of course, most of the population of Illinois is up in Chicago and the surrounding areas there. He has long talked about this idea of... I think it was President Bush who used to say, go around the filter of the media. And he often will say that when he is speaking to reporters. He'll say, you know, I need you guys to help me get this message out there. And he has done these Facebook appearances and video on Twitter. So he is really trying to, I think he feels frustrated that he cannot, or seems to think that he is not getting his message out there. Frankly, from the coverage I see, it seems like his message is pretty well represented in Illinois media. It's just that, you know, it's difficult to, how do I say this? The challenges facing state government make it difficult to sort of, you know, project a positive message all the time about what you're trying to do with things, because as we heard in the song, there is no budget.
Charlie, go ahead. I know you wanted to weigh in on this as well.
Well, I was just going to say, to me, it was obviously a campaign trip. It's all about his reelection. He could call it the Brother Bruce Traveling Salvation Show if he wanted to, but it doesn't you know, with apologies to Neil Diamond, but he's out there, he's getting his message out, and his message is, it's all the Democrats' fault. And here I am trying to save Illinois, and that mean old Mike Madigan is blocking me. And to the extent that he gets asked any tough questions, he's very skillful at dodging them. And to be honest, folks who work downstate TV markets, downstate newspapers, and who don't cover state government on a regular basis may be less willing to challenge what he says because they don't have the same background that, say, the Springfield Press Corps might have. And so he can go out and he can say things like, oh, yes, I presented a balanced budget. That is not true. His budget relies on stuff that doesn't happen or hasn't happened, stuff that probably never will happen. And so he just, the idea is if you just keep repeating your campaign talking points often enough, you'll convince people that it's accurate.
On your point about the downstate media, and certainly outside of Chicago and Springfield, which are more attuned to the workings of government, you would expect, you know, kind of a lesser kind of questioning of the governor. But just to kind of give you an indication of some of the coverage, not necessarily the coverage that you saw the Illinois Republican Party promoting of this, but you had the Peoria Journal-Star, for example, saying that Rauner reiterated the themes that he has discussed for months. You had the Quincy Herald-Whig saying that Rauner repeated those themes. You even had the Rockford Register-Star, which deemed his visit not newsworthy and didn't report on it.
And I would normally agree, and in listening to the some of our member stations in the public radio universe will, you know, share their tape of the governor's appearances there. And I do think, you know, sometimes you hear questions from local reporters that are, well, have you introduced a bill on that or something, you know, sort of very basic procedural questions that I like to think that the press corps here wouldn't spend time on. But frankly, the governor, even under very skilled questioning, you know, not to sound too egotistical about what we do here in Springfield, but people who know what they're talking about can ask the governor tough, pointed questions. And as I think Rick said earlier, he is very skillful at navigating the conversation back to just what he wants to say. And the governor did an appearance on Friday morning on Chicago public radio station WBEZ. They do a monthly segment, Ask the Governor, where he sits down for, I think it was about a half hour this morning, and they have the host ask questions. They have people calling in with questions. And for those of us who listen to the governor a lot, you know, we could have practically scripted it out ahead of time. He always says the exact same things. You've got to imagine they're poll tested and focus grouped. You know, we need structural changes in government, changes hard. And he is very good at, as Rick said, sort of deflecting and steering things back to the points he wants to make, regardless of who's asking him the questions.
Yeah, and I wasn't putting down our colleagues around the state, particularly in the broadcast area. But it would be kind of like if somebody said to me, well, you have to go and cover the next Blackhawks game. I would have no idea what to do, what to look for. I'd have to read up the rules again.
I'd help you, Charlie.
Oh, I know you could. but that's not something I follow with the same degree of, what would you say, interest that I do what's going on in state government. And that, I think, is an advantage that politicians have when they go out, particularly statewide candidates. They go to the smaller media markets and they get TV reporters who are very good at covering their communities but don't have that same level of expertise dealing with state government and the ins and outs of, say, the budget, for example, or school finance. And they're sort of easy prey for a governor who has his script and he's going to get it out come hell or high water.
Well, and in fairness to some of these reporters trying to cover this, they haven't seen governors come around in many years. I mean, Pat Quinn really stopped doing a lot, especially downstate visits. And, of course, Rod Blagojevich, especially when things started to go south for him, also they weren't coming around. So, you know, this might be, for many of them, they might have worked there for several years and not seen a governor come to their town.
And we should remember, too, that, you know, one aspect of this tour was to take advantage of the fact that, one, you have an affiliate of the Republican Governors Association that's been bombarding the airwaves with the Rauner Fix Illinois budget ads on his behalf, and two, the fact of the with the legislature on its two-week recess, that in a way, the Rauner camp sees this as a way for him to go out and kind of have unfettered message delivery without the normal way that we would do it of one-stop shopping with any number of Democratic critics available at the State House.
And he also sees this, doesn't he, Rick, as an opportunity to jump the gun a bit on some of his possible political opponents if he does run for another term. We've already seen several Democrats line up, and we know that there could be some big money spent against him starting, well, maybe even in the next month or so, but certainly over the summer and over the next several months. So this is really his opportunity to try to set the tone a bit.
Yes, I think absolutely. And when you look at some of the rhetoric that he used in some of these various tour stops in trying to, you know, it's blame the Democrats and, you know, I'm just not going to sign a tax increase. And, you know, if you kind of flash forward to that hard to believe but entirely possible scenario of no budget through the next election, you kind of see that theme established of Rauner basically saying, you know, it's the Democrats that want to raise your taxes and I stop them from doing it. And just, you know, cutting out the structural reform and all that kind of thing and just going to the heart of the, you know, the pocketbook of the issue of raising taxes. The other thing, too, is I kind of noted that more and more, and maybe it's me just interpreting it this way, but his references to career politicians. Now, obviously, he, you know, is pro-term limits, but two, he can't run for re-election as the outsider anymore. He's a politician. So now he's got to kind of find as his, you know, someone to point to, it's career politicians.
Yeah, that's a great point, Rick. It struck me a couple of days ago. I think he referred to himself. He said, "I, when I became a politician 2 years ago," and I thought, "Whoa, I feel like that's some sort of breakthrough," because he usually speaks so disparagingly of politicians that he acknowledged he had become one. Rick, I'm curious what you make of this. So I don't feel like there's any mystery about the fact that he's running for re-election. I think it was during a Tribune editorial board meeting in June last year that he confirmed that he would run for re-election. And so there's not really any question about that. Yeah, he hasn't had either a rally or an official video kind of, you know, in the sort of political theater realm that where people, you know, hit these milestones where he officially declares it. But, I mean, we all know he's running for re-election. He said it. And, you know, having this outside group pay for these ads, and he denies that they're political ads. I don't know. What do you think is behind that? Is this, you know, he doesn't. Is there a, you know, should there be a political truce of sorts while the session is ongoing? I mean, is that what he's worried about? I can't quite wrap my head around.
I mean, there isn't going to be a political truce, and there really hasn't been one all along with the battle of the ideologies that, you know, lies at the heart of this impasse. I think what really maybe what we saw this past week was a kind of a soft rollout of the re-elect. And, you know, he doesn't, there's no urgency to declare himself, you know, a candidate at all. He's certainly not going to face any primary of any substance. And as you pointed out, he's put $50 million of his own money in his campaign fund in December. He said he was running for re-election last June at the Tribune editorial board when he said that the Democrats are just trying to stall me out and I'm not going anywhere. But I think this is going to be part of this tour, and in the future is just going to be kind of a soft rollout and testing various kind of themes for, you know, going full force into next year.
Let's talk a little bit about the others who want to run against him. And Rick, you did report on one of those, Daniel Biss, the state senator from Evanston. He came out, made some news this week by releasing his income tax returns. Why did he do it now, and what did they show?
Well, obviously, we're approaching the federal tax deadline. But one other thing, too, is that he's also sponsored legislation that would require presidential candidates that to appear on the Illinois ballot would have to release their tax returns. And, of course, that's a very pointed shot at Donald Trump. Moreover, the tax returns that this released were not just the traditional front two pages of your federal income tax. It actually included deductions and schedules, and that's kind of a poke at Governor Rauner, who never really has gone that full extent in disclosing beyond his substantial income, you know, some of the sources of that income. Let's face it, we have a Democratic Party among the grassroots Democrats in Illinois that's very much split like the national Democrats along the lines that we saw during the last presidential campaign. The establishment Hillary Clinton Democrats and the kind of the progressive Bernie Sanders Democrats. And you've got this Democratic field now pretty much split along those lines. You have this, you have Northwest Side Chicago Alderman Amaya Pawar trying to play for the progressive Bernie Sanders progressives that are out there. You've got, on the establishment side, you've got J.B. Pritzker, you've got Chris Kennedy, both men of substantial wealth, part of the Democratic establishment, although both of them are trying to make plays to get to the progressive crowd. And, you know, the energy, let's face it, it really lies with the progressives. And it's going to be interesting to see how you can, if any unity can be achieved here, because as every candidate, regardless of what side they fall on in that Democratic divide, every candidate says, first and foremost, it's all about trying to beat Bruce Rauner.
And Charlie, you've always said that the wealthy, the uber wealthy candidates in the state don't always do that well. Now, of course, we can point to some who have, including Bruce Rauner, but it's not something that often plays that well statewide.
Yeah, that's true. If you look back at it historically, it helps to have money, but the person who spends the most money isn't necessarily going to win. And you can look at people like Blair Howell, who was running for the U.S. Senate, didn't make it. You could look at Ron Gidwitz, who attempted to run for governor, didn't make it in a primary. They were beaten by people who had lesser means. But if you, and I've said this before, the quandary for the Democrats is if you want to play all out to progressives, it would be hard to do it with a J.B. Pritzker or a Chris Kennedy at the top of the ticket. But on the other hand, unless you have access to those kinds of resources, Bruce Rauner and his wealthy buddies will outspend you by a wide margin. And I've seen estimates that this next governor's election is going to cost $100 million when all is said and done among the candidates.
I have to think, Charlie, that's probably even on the low side.
I would
think that truly if we get into, say, a Pritzker-Rauner general, I think it could easily double that amount.
Wow.
So basically we're looking at a situation here where, of course, the Republicans have some problems that they always have to deal with in a state like Illinois, but Democrats, you know, will they come together after what may or may not be a divisive primary? Brian, I mean, any idea of what we could see and, you know, what the next few months could bring us on that?
Well, I mean, I think we're obviously too early to tell how the primary is going to shake out right now. As we've been saying, you have the two guys who are sort of the vying for the wealthy position. I can self-fund against Rauner, J.B. Pritzker, who's even wealthier than Rauner, and Chris Kennedy, who has a lot of money, versus the more populist. I mean, it's kind of a rehash of the Clinton versus Sanders thing in a way, or at least that's how some of the underdogs are trying to style themselves, if you will. You know, Biss has been comparing himself, sort of striking this populist pose, although he in the past has, taken some unpopular position with core members of the Democratic base. He was a big architect of the attempt to reduce pension benefits a few years ago, one of the key negotiators on that, and will have to make some amends with unions if he wants to get their support. Amaya Pawar in Chicago is, you know, very explicitly linking himself to FDR and saying we need a new deal for Illinois. So we're going to see an interesting campaign on the Democratic side. And of course, the Republicans are there chiming in as well, trying to tie everybody to House Speaker Michael Madigan, which has been their dominant and pretty successful last year in the election strategy to basically say, you know, everybody's just doing Madigan's bidding. And somebody brought up earlier, you know, Rauner can't run as an outsider anymore, but it seems that's exactly what he's going to try to do. He is, you know, because he's, you know, he can say, look, I still want to change things. I want to shake up Springfield and bring back Illinois, but it's the big bad wolf, Speaker Madigan, you know, the man behind the curtain who, to mix, let's see how many more other metaphors I can mix in there, you know, who is trying to keep me from doing my job. I am still the outsider. You know, whether voters accept that will be an interesting question.
Don't forget the unknown factor as well as the Trump factor here. And of course, you know,
it's
still a long time before primary and general, but you know, if you still see this kind of continued kind of controversies involving the president and his actions, Democrats kind of in their anger showing perhaps remorse that more of them didn't turn out to vote. But also when you look at the suburbs, and I still think this is a very interesting dynamic. When you look at the collar counties, and of course, that's always been the traditional Republican-leaning firewall for the Democratic votes coming out of Chicago and Cook County. But when you look at that presidential race, and you see that Hillary Clinton won in all of the collar counties except for McHenry County, you know, that's got to give a lot of Republicans moving forward a lot of pause, because you know, you look at even that Bolingbrook mayoral race recently with Roger Clare, the 31-year mayor of Bolingbrook, invited Trump out to his golf course and had the fundraiser. That sparked an opponent. Clare ends up winning by 104 votes. The turnout quadrupled. You know, it's going to be, I think that's a precursor for Republicans needing to know, you know, they've got to really put together a very, very strong ground game and not take for granted the collar counties in the way that they used to. And that's particularly true for the statewide candidates.
And Charlie, did you ever think you would see a day where the suburbs went so Democratic?
No, I really didn't. And this is something that I've talked about before, but when I started as a reporter, for example, even in Cook County, South Cook County, places like Bloom Township and Rich Township, they were solid Republican, and they sent Republican senators and representatives to the General Assembly. Now they're solidly Democratic, and they send Democrats. There are a couple of Senate districts that are located largely in Kane County, one focused around Elgin, another focused around Aurora. In the early 2000s, they sent Democrats to the Senate. First time in state history that a Democrat was elected from a Senate district largely in Kane County. So there's a changing demographic, and I think a lot of it has to do with the growth of the Hispanic population. And that's a demographic group that's difficult for Republicans to gain favor with when you have some voices as stridently anti-immigrant / anti-Hispanic, is how it translates, as, say, Donald Trump. The fact that he tried to put through his ban on accepting people who were from Muslim countries, you would think, well, that wouldn't affect somebody who's Hispanic, but just the notion that these people aren't like us, so we don't want them. I think among Hispanics, that's a deterrent for them to become the kind of Republican voters that you would need for Republicans to once again gain dominance in some of those collar counties. And, of course, in South Cook County, it's largely the migration of African-American community from the south side of Chicago moving into those bedroom suburbs.
And, Rick, let me ask you, because I think that's a good point Charlie was making, you know, especially when it comes to the Hispanic population. Donald Trump not doing that well with them, of course, in most polling. He's only been in office for a few months, a couple of months here. But by the time this governor's race starts to roll, you know, Bruce Rauner has really tried to stay out of that fray and avoided getting into any public arguments about Donald Trump. Is he going to have to come out possibly a little bit more anti-Trump if he has a chance to win in Illinois?
I mean, if you still have these raging controversies over the presidency, I think that's likely happen. And yes, we all know about the steps that Governor Rauner has taken to try to distance himself away from Trump. But at the same time, you know, when he gets asked questions about, when the governor gets asked questions about, well, there's the Republican efforts to repeal and replace Obamacare. What are your concerns here? What would you like to see happen? And his comments are, well, I don't really want to talk about that in public. Well, you know, this is, you know, in those early days of the Trump presidency, that was the story of the day. And no doubt the issue of Obamacare is going to come back raging in the midterm congressional elections. And I don't know that you can just say, oh, you know, I'm concerned about Medicaid reimbursement levels and perhaps what block granting of Medicaid to the states would do to Illinois. It's going to take more than just saying, well, I'm working with my fellow Republican governors. It's what do you want to see? And, you know, even going back to the governor's trip, you know, the two-day tour, it's kind of emblematic of his speeches, is that it's largely devoid of any specifics. And, you know, when we get into closer campaign time, you know, people are going to want specifics. We're going to be asking an awful lot of specific questions. And, yes, it'll be very interesting to see how the dance card goes with the governor and Donald Trump if things continue as the way they are.
I would normally be inclined to agree with Rick there that, you know, the governor, and certainly the governor, is going to be asked about these things, and I'm sure President Trump will continue doing interesting things that inspire reporters to ask other Republican politicians what they think about it. But I just keep going back to this moment that has stuck with me from the 2014 campaign. I think it was actually at a Tribune editorial board meeting as well, where one of the members of the Tribune editorial board kept pressing the governor on same-sex marriage. You know, what do you think? What's in your heart? And he just had this very short answer that he'd used many times before about, I think it should be up to the voters or something like that. And, well, what's in your heart? What do you think? I remember that question. What's in your heart? And he just completely refused to answer it. And obviously, he won that election. You know, that wasn't necessarily the dominant issue of the day, the way immigration or foreign wars or something could be here next year. But I feel like the governor has been remarkable in his ability to answer only the questions he wants to answer and to stay on his message. And the voters, at least last time, were okay with that.
We're another week closer to the end of the General Assembly spring session. That's scheduled to end May 31st. Lawmakers, though, will be taking another week off. That comes next week, and then they'll be back here in later April. We'll be discussing more on what that could mean for a state budget next time on State Week. That will do it for today. The members of our broadcast include Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org. You can also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. The production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.